And now chapter 20 of the Madhyalila, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Sanatan Goswami in the science of the Absolute Truth.
Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda.
Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has unlimited wonderful opulences. By his mercy, even a person born as the lowest of men can spread the science of devotional service. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Nityananda Prabhu. All glories to Advaitacharya. And all glories to all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. While Sanatan Goswami was imprisoned in Bengal, a letter arrived from Srila Rupa Goswami. When Sanatan Goswami received this note from Rupa Goswami, he became very pleased. He immediately went to the jail superintendent, who was a meat-eater, and spoke as follows.
Dear sir, you are a saintly person and are very fortunate. You have full knowledge of the revealed scriptures, such as the Koran and similar books. If one releases a conditioned soul or imprisoned person, according to religious principles, he himself is also released from material bondage by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Previously, I have done much for you. Now I am in difficulty. Please return my goodwill by releasing me. Here are 5,000 gold coins. Please accept them. By releasing me, you will receive the results of pious activities and gain material profit as well. Thus you will profit in two ways simultaneously.
In this way, Sanatan Goswami convinced the jailkeeper, who replied,
Please hear me, my dear sir. I am willing to release you, but I am afraid of the government.
Sanatan replied,
There is no danger. The Nawab has gone to the south. If he returns, tell him that Sanatan went to pass stool near the bank of the Ganges, and that as soon as he saw the Ganges, he jumped in. Tell him I looked for him a long time, but I could not find any trace of him. He jumped in with his shackles, and therefore he was drowned and washed away by the waves. There is no reason for you to be afraid, for I shall not remain in this country. I shall become a mendicant and go to the holy city of Mecca.
Sanatan Goswami could see that the mind of the meat-eater was still not satisfied. He then stacked 7,000 gold coins before him. When the meat-eater saw the coins, he was attracted to them. He then agreed, and that night he cut Sanatan's shackles and let him cross the Ganges. In this way, Sanatan Goswami was released. However, he was not able to walk along the path of the fortress. Walking day and night, he finally arrived at the hilly tract of land known as Patada. After reaching Patada, he met a landholder and submissively requested him to get him across that hilly tract of land. A man who is expert in palmistry was at that time staying with the landlord. Knowing about Sanatan, he whispered the following in the landlord's ear. The palmist said,
This man, Sanatan, possesses 8 gold coins.
Hearing this, the landlord was very pleased and spoke the following to Sanatan Goswami. The landlord said,
I shall get you across that hilly tract of land at night with my own men. Now just take your lunch and cook for yourself.
Saying this, the landlord offered Sanatan grains to cook. Sanatan then went to the riverside and took his bath. Because Sanatan had been fasting for 2 days, he cooked the food and ate it. However, having formerly been a minister of the Nawab, he began to contemplate the situation. As a former minister for the Nawab, Sanatan could certainly understand diplomacy. He therefore thought, "Why is this landlord offering me so much respect?" Thinking in this way, he questioned his servant, whose name was Ishan. Sanatan asked his servant, "Ishan, I think you have some valuable things with you." Ishan replied,
"Yes, I have 7 gold coins."
Hearing this, Sanatan Goswami chastised his servant, saying, "Why have you brought this death knell with you?" Thereupon Sanatan Goswami took the 7 gold coins in his hands and went to the landlord. Holding the gold coins before him, he spoke as follows, "I have these 7 gold coins with me. Please accept them, and from a religious point of view, please get me across that hilly tract of land. I am a prisoner of the government, and I cannot go along the way of the ramparts. It would be very pious of you to take this money and kindly get me across this hilly tract of land." Smiling, the landlord said,
"Before you offered them, I already knew that there were 8 gold coins in your servant's possession. On this very night, I would have killed you and taken your coins. It is very good that you have voluntarily offered them to me. I am now relieved from such a sinful activity. I am very satisfied with your behavior. I shall not accept these gold coins, but I shall get you across that hilly tract of land simply to perform a pious activity."
Sanatan replied, "If you do not accept these coins, someone else will kill me for them. It is better that you save me from the danger by accepting the coins." After this settlement was made, the landlord gave Sanatan Goswami 4 watchmen to accompany him. They went through the forest path for the whole night and thus brought him over the hilly tract of land. After crossing the hills, Sanatan Goswami told his servant, "Ishan, I think you still have some balance left from the gold coins." Ishan replied,
"I still have 1 gold coin in my possession."
Sanatan Goswami then said, "Take the coin and return to your home." After departing from Ishan, Sanatan Goswami began traveling alone with a water pot in his hand. Simply covered with a torn quilt, he thus lost all his anxiety. Walking and walking, Sanatan Goswami finally arrived at a place called Hajipur. That evening he sat down within a garden. In Hajipur, there was a gentleman named Srikanta, who happened to be the husband of Sanatan Goswami's sister. He was engaged there in government service. Srikanta had 300,000 gold coins with him, which had been given to him by the emperor for the purchase of horses. Thus, Srikanta was buying horses and dispatching them to the emperor. When Srikanta was sitting in an elevated place, he could see Sanatan Goswami. That night he took a servant and went to see Sanatan Goswami. When they met, they had many conversations. Sanatan Goswami told him in detail about his arrest and release. Srikanta then told Sanatan Goswami,
"Stay here for at least 2 days and dress up like a gentleman. Abandon these dirty garments."
Sanatan Goswami replied, "I shall not stay here even for a moment. Please help me cross the Ganges. I shall leave immediately." With great care, Srikanta gave him a woolen blanket and helped him cross the Ganges. Thus Sanatan Goswami departed again. After a few days, Sanatan Goswami arrived at Varanasi. He was very pleased to hear about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's arrival there. Sanatan Goswami then went to the house of Chandrasekhar and sat down by the door. Understanding what was happening, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke to Chandrasekhar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "There is a devotee at your door. Please call him in." Going outside, Chandrasekhar could not see a Vaishnav at his door. When Chandrasekhar informed the Lord that no Vaishnav was at his door, the Lord asked him, "Is there anyone at your door at all?" Chandrasekhar replied,
"There is a Muslim mendicant."
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately said, "Well, please bring him here." Chandrasekhar then spoke to Sanatan Goswami, who was still sitting beside the door.
"O Muslim mendicant, please come in. The Lord is calling you."
Sanatan Goswami was very pleased to hear this order, and he entered Chandrasekhar's house. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Sanatan Goswami in the courtyard, he immediately went up to him with great haste. After embracing him, the Lord was overwhelmed with ecstatic love. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu touched Sanatan Goswami, Sanatan was also overwhelmed with ecstatic love. In a faltering voice, he said, "Oh, my Lord, do not touch me." Shoulder to shoulder, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatan Goswami began to cry unlimitedly. Chandrasekhar was very astonished to see this. Catching his hand, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took Sanatan Goswami inside and made him sit in an elevated place next to him. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began cleansing Sanatan Goswami's body with his own transcendental hand, Sanatan Goswami said,
"Oh, my Lord, please do not touch me."
The Lord replied, "I am touching you just to purify myself, because by the force of your devotional service, you can purify the whole universe. Saints of your caliber are themselves places of pilgrimage. Because of their purity, they are constant companions of the Lord, and therefore they can purify even the places of pilgrimage." As the Lord said in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, "Even though a person is a very learned scholar of the Sanskrit Vedic literatures, he is not accepted as my devotee unless he is pure in devotional service. However, even though a person is born in a family of dog-eaters, he is very dear to me if he is a pure devotee who has no motive to enjoy fruitive activity or mental speculation. Indeed, all respect should be given to him, and whatever he offers should be accepted. Such devotees are as worshipable as I am." As Prahlad Maharaj says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, "One may be born in a Brahmin family and have all 12 brahminical qualities, but if he is not devoted to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who has a navel shaped like a lotus, he is not as good as a chandal who has dedicated his mind, words, activities, wealth, and life to the service of the Lord. Simply to take birth in a Brahmin family or to have brahminical qualities is not sufficient. One must become a pure devotee of the Lord. If a svapacha or chandal is a devotee, he delivers not only himself, but his whole family, whereas a Brahmin who is not a devotee, but simply has brahminical qualifications, cannot even purify himself, not to speak of his family." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "By seeing you, by touching you, and by glorifying your transcendental qualities, one can perfect the purpose of all sense activity. This is the verdict of the revealed scriptures. My dear Vaishnav, seeing a person like you is the perfection of one's eyesight. Touching your lotus feet is the perfection of the sense of touch. Glorifying your good qualities is the tongue's real activity. For in the material world, it is very difficult to find a pure devotee of the Lord. My dear Sanatan, please hear from me. Krishna is very merciful, and he is the deliverer of all fallen souls. My dear Sanatan, Krishna has saved you from Maharaurava, life's deepest hell. He is an ocean of mercy, and his activities are very grave." Sanatan replied, "I do not know who Krishna is. As far as I am concerned, I have been released from prison only by your mercy." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then asked Sanatan Goswami, "How were you released from prison?" Sanatan then described the story from beginning to end. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "I met your two brothers, Rupa and Anupam, at Prayag. They have now gone to Vrindavan." By the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sanatan Goswami met both Tapan Mishra and Chandra Shekhar. Tapan Mishra then extended an invitation to Sanatan, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Sanatan to go get a shave. After this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Chandra Shekhar and asked him to take Sanatan Goswami with him. He also asked him to take away Sanatan's present dress. Chandra Shekhar then made Sanatan Goswami look like a gentleman. He took him to bathe in the Ganges, and afterwards he brought him a new set of clothes. Chandra Shekhar offered a new set of garments to Sanatan Goswami, but Sanatan did not accept them. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard news of this, he became unlimitedly happy. After bathing at noon, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to the house of Tapan Mishra for lunch. He took Sanatan Goswami with him. After washing his feet, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat down for lunch. He asked Tapan Mishra to supply Sanatan Goswami lunch also. Tapan Mishra then said,
"Sanatan has some duty to perform, therefore he cannot accept lunch now. At the conclusion of the meal, I shall supply Sanatan with some remnants."
After eating, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took rest for a while. Tapan Mishra then gave Sanatan Goswami the remnants of food left by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Tapan Mishra offered Sanatan Goswami a new cloth, he did not accept it. Instead, he spoke as follows,
"If you want to give me some cloth according to your desire, please give me an old cloth that you have used."
When Tapan Mishra gave Sanatan Goswami a used dhoti, Sanatan immediately tore it in pieces to make two sets of outer cloth and underwear. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced the Maharashtriya Brahmin to Sanatan, the Brahmin immediately invited Sanatan Goswami for full meals. The Brahmin said,
"My dear Sanatan, as long as you remain at Kashi, please accept lunch at my place."
Sanatan replied,
"I shall practice the process of madukari, or begging from door to door. Why should I accept full meals in the house of a Brahmin?"
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt unlimited happiness to observe Sanatan Goswami's strict following of the principles of sannyas. However, he repeatedly glanced at the woolen blanket Sanatan Goswami was wearing. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was repeatedly glancing at this valuable woolen blanket, Sanatan Goswami could understand that the Lord did not approve of it. He then began to consider a way to give it up. Thinking in this way, Sanatan went to the bank of the Ganges to bathe. While there, he saw that a mendicant from Bengal had washed his quilt and had spread it out to dry. Sanatan Goswami then told the Bengali mendicant,
"My dear brother, please do me a favor. Trade me your quilt for this woolen blanket."
The mendicant replied,
"Sir, you are a respectable gentleman. Why are you joking with me? Why would you trade your valuable blanket for my torn quilt?"
Sanatan said, "I am not joking. I am speaking the truth. Kindly take this blanket in exchange for your torn quilt."
Saying this, Sanatan Goswami exchanged the blanket for the quilt. He then returned to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the quilt on his shoulder. When Sanatan Goswami returned, the Lord asked, "Where is your woolen blanket?" Sanatan Goswami then narrated the whole story to the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, "I have already deliberately considered this matter. Since Lord Krishna is very merciful, he has nullified your attachment for material things. Why should Krishna allow you to maintain a last bit of material attachment? After vanquishing a disease, a good physician does not allow any of the disease to remain. It is contradictory to practice madukari and at the same time wear a valuable blanket. One loses his spiritual strength by doing this, and one will also become an object for jokes." Sanatan Goswami replied,
"The Supreme Personality of Godhead has saved me from the sinful life of material existence. By his desire, my last piece of material attraction is now gone."
Being pleased with Sanatan Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestowed his causeless mercy upon him. By the Lord's mercy, Sanatan Goswami received the spiritual strength to inquire from him. Formerly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy spiritual questions, and by the Lord's causeless mercy, Ramananda Roy could properly reply. Now, by the Lord's mercy, Sanatan Goswami questioned the Lord, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally supplied the truth. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally told Sanatan Goswami about the Lord's real identity. He also told him about the Lord's conjugal love, his personal opulence, and the mellows of devotional service. All these truths were explained to Sanatan Goswami by the Lord himself out of his causeless mercy. Putting a straw in his mouth and bowing down, Sanatan Goswami clasped the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and humbly spoke as follows.
I was born in a low family, and my associates are all low-class men. I myself am fallen and am the lowest of men. Indeed, I have passed my whole life fallen in the well of sinful materialism. I do not know what is beneficial for me and what is detrimental. Nonetheless, in ordinary dealings, people consider me a learned scholar, and I am also thinking of myself as such. Out of your causeless mercy, you have delivered me from the materialistic path. Now, by the same causeless mercy, please tell me what my duty is. Who am I? Why do the threefold miseries always give me trouble? If I do not know this, how can I be benefited? Actually, I do not know how to inquire about the goal of life and the process for obtaining it. Being merciful upon me, please explain all these truths.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Lord Krishna has bestowed his full mercy upon you, so that all these things are known to you. For you, the threefold miseries certainly do not exist. Since you possess the Lord's potency, you certainly know these things. However, it is the nature of a sadhu to inquire. Although he knows these things, the sadhu inquires for the sake of strictness. Those who are anxious to awaken their spiritual consciousness, who have unflinching intelligence, and who are not deviated, certainly attain the desired goal. You are fit to propagate the cult of devotional service. Therefore, gradually hear all the truths about it from me. I shall tell you about them. It is the living entity's constitutional position to be an eternal servant of Krishna, because he is the marginal energy of Krishna and a manifestation, simultaneously one and different from, the Lord, like a molecular particle of sunshine or fire. Krishna has three varieties of energy. As stated in the Vishnu Purana, just as the illumination of a fire, which is situated in one place, is spread all over, the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman, are spread all over this universe. Lord Krishna naturally has three energetic transformations, and these are known as the spiritual potency, the living entity potency, and the illusory potency. Originally, Krishna's energy is spiritual, and the energy known as the living entity is also spiritual. However, there is another energy called illusion, which consists of fruitive activity. That is the Lord's third potency. All the creative energies, which are inconceivable to a common man, exist in the Supreme Absolute Truth. These inconceivable energies act in the process of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. O chief of the ascetics, just as there are two energies possessed by fire, namely heat and light, these inconceivable creative energies are the natural characteristics of the Absolute Truth. This is a quotation from the Vishnu Purana. O King, the Kshetra Gya Shakti is the living entity. Although he has the facility to live in either the material or spiritual world, he suffers the threefold miseries of material existence because he is influenced by the avidya or nation's potency, which covers his constitutional position.
This living entity, covered by the influence of nescience, exists in different forms in the material condition. O King, he is thus proportionately freed from the influence of material energy to greater or lesser degrees. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Besides this inferior nature, O mighty armed Arjun, there is a superior energy of mine, which consists of all living entities who are struggling with material nature and sustaining the universe." Forgetting Krishna, the living entity has been attracted by the external feature from time immemorial. Therefore, the illusory energy, or Maya, gives him all kinds of misery in his material existence. In the material condition, the living entity is sometimes raised to higher planetary systems and material prosperity, and sometimes drowned in a hellish situation. His state is exactly like that of a criminal whom a king punishes by submerging him in water and then raising him again from the water. When the living entity is attracted by the material energy, which is separate from Krishna, he is overpowered by fear. Because he is separated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead by material energy, his conception of life is reversed. In other words, instead of being the eternal servant of Krishna, he becomes Krishna's competitor. This is called Viparyayo Smriti. To nullify this mistake, one who is actually learned and advanced worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his spiritual master, worshipful deity, and source of life. He thus worships the Lord by the process of unalloyed devotional service. If the conditioned soul becomes Krishna conscious by the mercy of saintly persons who voluntarily preach scriptural injunctions and help him become Krishna conscious, the conditioned soul is liberated from the clutches of Maya, who then gives him up. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it." The conditioned soul cannot revive his Krishna consciousness by his own effort. But out of causeless mercy, Lord Krishna compiled the Vedic literature and its supplements, the Puranas. The forgetful conditioned soul is educated by Krishna through the Vedic literatures, the realized spiritual master, and the Supersoul. Through these, he can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is, and he can understand that Lord Krishna is his eternal master and deliverer from the clutches of Maya. In this way, one can acquire real knowledge of his conditioned life and can come to understand how to attain liberation. The Vedic literatures give information about the living entity's eternal relationship with Krishna, which is called Sambandha. The living entity's understanding of this relationship and acting accordingly is called Abhideya. Returning home back to Godhead is the ultimate goal of life and is called Prayojana. Devotional service or sense activity for the satisfaction of the Lord is called Abhideya because it can develop one's original love of Godhead, which is the goal of life. This goal is the living entity's topmost interest and greatest wealth. Thus one attains the platform of transcendental loving service unto the Lord. When one attains the transcendental bliss of an intimate relationship with Krishna, he renders service to him and tastes the mellows of Krishna consciousness. The following example may be given. Once a learned astrologer came to the house of a poor man, and seeing his distressed condition, questioned him. The astrologer asked, "Why are you unhappy? Your father was very wealthy, but he did not disclose his wealth to you because he died elsewhere." Just as the words of the astrologer, Sarvagya, gave news of the poor man's treasure, Vedic literatures advise one about Krishna consciousness when one is inquisitive to know why he is in a distressed material condition. By the words of the astrologer, the poor man's connection with the treasure was established. Similarly, Vedic literature advises us that our real connection is with Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although being assured of his father's treasure, the poor man cannot acquire this treasure by such knowledge alone. Therefore, the astrologer had to inform him of the means whereby he could actually find the treasure. The astrologer said, "The treasure is in this place, but if you dig toward the southern side, the wasps and drones will rise, and you will not get your treasure. If you dig on the western side, there is a ghost who will create such a disturbance that your hands will not even touch the treasure. If you dig on the northern side, there is a big black snake that will devour you if you attempt to dig up the treasure. However, if you dig up a small quantity of dirt on the eastern side, your hands will immediately touch the pot of treasure." Revealed scriptures conclude that one should give up fruitive activity, speculative knowledge, and the mystic yoga system, and instead take to devotional service by which Krishna can be fully satisfied. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna said, "My dear Uddhava, neither through Ashtanga Yoga or the mystic yoga system to control the senses, nor through impersonal monism or an analytical study of the Absolute Truth, nor through study of the Vedas, nor through practice of austerities, nor through charity, nor through acceptance of sannyas, can one satisfy me as much as one can by developing unalloyed devotional service unto me. Being very dear to the devotees and sadhus, I am attained through unflinching faith and devotional service. This bhakti yoga system, which gradually increases attachment for me, purifies even a human being born among dog-eaters. That is to say, everyone can be elevated to the spiritual platform by the process of bhakti yoga." The conclusion is that devotional service is the only means to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This system is therefore called abhideya. This is the verdict of all revealed scriptures. When one actually becomes rich, he naturally enjoys all kinds of happiness. When one is actually in a happy mood, all distressful conditions go away by themselves. No extraneous endeavor is needed. Similarly, as a result of bhakti, one's dormant love for Krishna awakens. When one is so situated that he can taste the association of Lord Krishna, material existence, the repetition of birth and death, comes to an end. The goal of love of Godhead is not to become materially rich or free from material bondage. The real goal is to be situated in devotional service to the Lord and to enjoy transcendental bliss. In Vedic literatures, Krishna is the central point of attraction, and his service is our activity. To attain the platform of love of Krishna is life's ultimate goal. Therefore, Krishna, Krishna's service, and love of Krishna are the three great riches of life. In all revealed scriptures, beginning with the Vedas, the central point of attraction is Krishna. When complete knowledge of him is realized, the bondage of Maya, the illusory energy, is automatically broken. It says in the Padma Purana, "There are many types of Vedic literatures and supplementary Puranas. In each of them, there are particular demigods who are spoken of as the chief demigods. This is just to create an illusion for moving and non-moving living entities. Let them perpetually engage in such imaginations. However, when one analytically studies all these Vedic literatures collectively, he comes to the conclusion that Lord Vishnu is the one and only Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one accepts Vedic literature by interpretation, or even by dictionary meaning, directly or indirectly, the ultimate declaration of Vedic knowledge points to Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna says to Uddhava, "What is the direction of all Vedic literatures? On whom do they set focus? Who is the purpose of all speculation? Outside of me, no one knows these things. Now you should know that all these activities are aimed at ordaining and setting forth me. The purpose of Vedic literature is to know me by different speculations, either by indirect understanding or by dictionary understanding. Everyone is speculating about me. The essence of all Vedic literatures is to distinguish me from Maya. By considering the illusory energy, one comes to the platform of understanding me. In this way, one becomes free from speculation about the Vedas and comes to me as the conclusion. Thus, one is satisfied." The transcendental form of Lord Krishna is unlimited and also has unlimited opulence. He possesses the internal potency, external potency, and marginal potency. Both the material and spiritual world are transformations of Krishna's internal and external potencies. Therefore, Krishna is the original source of both material and spiritual manifestations. The 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the 10th object, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of all surrendered souls. He is known as Sri Krishna, and he is the ultimate source of all the universes. Let me offer my obeisances unto him. O Sanatan, please hear about the eternal form of Lord Krishna. He is the absolute truth, devoid of duality, but present in Vrindavan as the son of Nanda Maharaj. Krishna is the original source of everything and the sum total of everything. He appears as the supreme youth, and his whole body is composed of spiritual bliss. He is the shelter of everything and master of everyone. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. The original Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. His original name is Govinda. He is full of all opulences, and his eternal abode is known as Goloka Vrindavan. All these incarnations of Godhead are either plenary portions or parts of the plenary portions of the Purusha avatars. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. In every age, he protects the world through his different features when the world is disturbed by the enemies of Indra. There are three kinds of spiritual processes for understanding the absolute truth: the processes of speculative knowledge, mystic yoga, and bhakti yoga. According to these three processes, the absolute truth is manifested as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. The manifestation of the impersonal Brahman effulgence, which is without variety, is the rays of Krishna's bodily effulgence. It is exactly like the sun. When the sun is seen by our ordinary eyes, it simply appears to consist of effulgence. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma says, "I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is endowed with great power. The glowing effulgence of his transcendental form is the impersonal Brahman, which is absolute complete, and unlimited, and which displays the varieties of countless planets with their different opulences in millions and millions of universes. The Paramatma, or the Supersoul feature, is the partial plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original source of all living entities. It is also Krishna, who is the original source of Paramatma. You should know Krishna as the original soul of all Atmas, or living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this with the strength of his own internal potency. Lord Krishna himself says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, "But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe." Only by devotional activity can one understand the transcendental form of the Lord, which is perfect in all respects. Although his form is one, he can expand his form into unlimited numbers by his supreme will. The Supreme Personality of Godhead exists in three principal forms, Svayamrupa, Tad Ekatma Rupa, and Avesha Rupa. The original form of the Lord, or Svayamrupa, is exhibited in two forms, Svayamrupa and Svayam Prakash. In his original form, as Svayamrupa, Krishna is observed as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. In his original form, Krishna manifests himself in two features, Prabhav and Vaibhav. He expands his one original form into many, as he did during the Raslila dance. When the Lord married 16,108 wives in Dvarka, he expanded himself into many forms. These expansions, and the expansions at the Ras dance, are called Prabhav Prakash, according to the directions of revealed scriptures. The Prabhav Prakash expansions of Lord Krishna are not like the expansions of the sage Saubari. Had they been so, Narad would have been astonished to see them. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad says, "It is astounding that Lord Sri Krishna, who is one without a second, expanded himself in 16,000 similar forms to marry 16,000 queens in their respective homes." If one form or feature is differently manifested according to different emotional features, it is called Vaibhav Prakash. When the Lord expands himself in innumerable forms, there is no difference in the forms, but due to different features, bodily colors, and weapons, the names are different. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, "In different Vedic scriptures, there are prescribed rules and regulative principles for worshipping different types of forms. When one is purified by these rules and regulations, he worships you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although manifest in many forms, you are one." The first manifestation of the Vaibhav feature of Krishna is Sri Balaramji. Sri Balaram and Krishna have different bodily colors, but otherwise Sri Balaram is equal to Krishna in all respects. An example of Vaibhav Prakash is the son of Devaki. He sometimes has two hands and sometimes four hands. When the Lord is two-handed, he is called Vaibhav Prakash, and when he is four-handed, he is called Prabhav Prakash. In his original form, the Lord dresses like a cowherd boy and thinks himself one of them. When he appears as Vasudev, the son of Vasudev and Devaki, his dress and consciousness are those of a kshatriya, a warrior. When one compares the beauty, opulence, sweetness, and intellectual pastimes of Vasudev, the warrior, to Krishna, the cowherd boy, son of Nanda Maharaj, one sees that Krishna's attributes are more pleasant.
Indeed, Vasudev is agitated just to see the sweetness of Govinda, and a transcendental greed awakens in him to enjoy that sweetness. In the Lalita Madhava, he says, "My dear friend, this dramatic actor appears like a second form of my own self. Like a picture, he displays my pastimes as a cowherd boy, overflowing with wonderfully attractive sweetness and fragrance, which are so dear to the damsels of Vraj. When I see such a display, my heart becomes greatly excited. I long for such pastimes, and desire a form exactly like the damsels of Vraj." One instance of Vasudev's attraction to Krishna occurred when Vasudev saw the Gandharva dance at Mathura. Another instance occurred in Dwarka, when Vasudev was surprised to see a picture of Krishna. Who manifests an abundance of sweetness greater than mine, which has never been experienced before, and which causes wonder to all? Alas, I myself, my mind bewildered upon seeing this beauty, impetuously desired to enjoy it, like Srimati Radharani. This verse was spoken by Vasudev in Dvorka. When that body is a little differently manifest, and its features a little different in transcendental emotion and form, it is called Tad Ekatma. In the Tad Ekatma Rupa, there are pastime expansions, or vilas, and personal expansions, or svamsha. Consequently, there are two divisions. According to pastime and personal expansion, there are various differences. Again, the vilas forms are divided into twofold categories, prabhav and vibhav. Again, the pastimes of these forms are of unlimited variety. The chief quadruple expansions are named Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. These are called Prabhav Vilas. Balaram, who has the same original form of Krishna, is himself a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, and he also considers himself to belong to the Kshatriya race in Dvarka. Thus his color and dress are different, and he is called a pastime form of Krishna. Sri Balaram is a Vaibhav Prakash manifestation of Krishna. He is also manifest in the original quadruple expansion of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. These are Prabhav Vilas expansions with different emotions. The first expansion of the Chaturvyuha, quadruple forms, is unique. There is nothing to compare with them. These quadruple forms are the source of unlimited quadruple forms. These four Prabhav pastime forms of Lord Krishna reside eternally in Dvarka and Mathura. From the original quadruple expansion, 24 forms are manifest. They differ according to the placement of weapons in their four hands. They are called Vaibhav Vilas. Lord Krishna again expands, and within the Paravyoma, the spiritual sky, he is situated in fullness as the four-handed Narayan, accompanied by expansions of the original quadruple form. Thus the original quadruple forms again manifest themselves in a second quadruple expansion. The residences of these second quadruple expansions cover the four directions. Again, these quadruple forms expand three times, beginning with Keshav. That is the fulfillment of the pastime forms. Out of the Chaturvyuha, there are three expansions of each and every form, and they are named differently according to the position of the weapons. The Vasudev expansions are Keshav, Narayan, and Madhava. The expansions of Sankarshan are Govinda, Vishnu, and Madhusudan. This Govinda is different from the original Govinda, for he is not the son of Maharaj Nanda. The expansions of Pradyumna are Trivikram, Vaman, and Sridhar. The expansions of Aniruddha are Rishikesh, Padmanabha, and Damodar.
These 12 are the predominating deities of the 12 months. Keshav is the predominating deity of Agrahayana, and Narayan is the predominating deity of Posha. The predominating deity for the month of Magha is Madhava, and the predominating deity for the month of Phalgun is Govinda. Vishnu is the predominating deity for Chaitra, and Madhusudan is the predominating deity for Vaishaka. In the month of Jayishta, the predominating deity is Tribhakram. In Ashada, the deity is Vaman. In Shravan, the deity is Sridhar. And in Bhadra, the deity is Rishikesh. In the month of Ashvin, the predominating deity is Padmanabha. And in Kartik, it is Damodar. This Damodar is different from Radha Damodar, the son of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan. When putting the 12 tilak marks on the 12 places of the body, one has to chant the mantra consisting of these 12 Vishnu names. After daily worship, when one anoints the different parts of the body with water, these names should be chanted as one touches each part of the body. From Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, there are 8 additional pastime expansions. O Sanatan, please hear me as I mention their names. The 8 pastime expansions are Purushottam, Achyuta, Nrsinga, Janardhan, Hari, Krishna, Adhoksaja, and Upendra. Of these 8 expansions, 2 are pastime forms of Vasudev. Their names are Adhoksaja and Purushottam. The 2 pastime forms of Sankarshan are Upendra and Achyuta. The pastime forms of Pradyumna are Nrsinga and Janardhan, and the pastime forms of Aniruddha are Hari and Krishna. All these 24 forms constitute the chief Prabhavilas pastime forms of the Lord. They are named differently according to the position of weapons in their hands. Of all these, the forms that differ in dress and feature are distinguished as Vaibhav Vilas. Of them, Padmanabha, Trivikram, Nrsinga, Vaman, Hari, Krishna, and so on all have different bodily features. Vasudev and the 3 others are direct Prabhav pastime forms of Lord Krishna. Of these quadruple forms, the pastime expansions are 20 in number. All these forms preside over different Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual world, beginning from the east in consecutive order. In each of 8 directions, there are 3 different forms. Although they all have their residences eternally in the spiritual sky, some of them are situated within the material universes. There is an eternal residence of Narayan in the spiritual sky. In the upper portion of the spiritual sky is a planet known as Krishna Loka, which is filled with all opulences. The planet of Krishna Loka is divided into 3 sections, Gokul, Mathura, and Dvarka. Lord Keshav eternally resides at Mathura, and Lord Purushottam, known by the name Jagannath, eternally resides at Neelachal. At Prayag, the Lord is situated as Bindu Madhava, and at Mandara Parvat, the Lord is known as Madhusudan. Vasudev, Padmanabha, and Janardhan reside at Anandaranya. At Vishnu Kanchi, there is Lord Vishnu. At Mayapur, Lord Hari. And throughout the universe, a variety of other forms. Within the universe, the Lord is situated in different spiritual manifestations. These are situated on 7 islands in 9 sections. Thus, their pastimes are going on. The Lord is situated in all the universes in different forms, just to please His devotees.
Thus the Lord destroys irreligious principles and establishes religious principles. Of these forms, some are considered incarnations. Examples are Lord Vishnu, Lord Trivikram, Lord Nrsimha, and Lord Brahman. My dear Sanatan, just hear from me as I tell you how the different Vishnu Murtis hold their weapons, beginning with the disc, and how they are named differently according to the placement of objects in their hands. The procedure for counting begins with the lower right hand and goes to the upper right hand, the upper left hand, and the lower left hand. Lord Vishnu is named according to the order the objects are held in his hands. According to the Siddhartha Samhita, there are 24 forms of Lord Vishnu. First, I shall describe, according to the opinion of that book, the location of the weapons, beginning with the disc. In his lower right hand, Lord Vasudev holds a club. In his upper right hand, a conch shell. In the upper left hand, a disc. And in the lower left hand, a lotus flower. In his lower right hand, Sankarshan holds a club. In his upper right hand, a conch shell. In his upper left hand, a lotus flower. And in his lower left hand, a disc. Pradyumna holds the disc, conch, club, and lotus. Aniruddha holds the disc, club, conch, and lotus. Thus, in the spiritual sky, the expansions, headed by Vasudev, hold weapons in their own respective order. I am repeating the opinion of Siddhartha Samhita in describing them. Lord Keshav holds the lotus, conch, disc, and club. Lord Narayan holds the conch, lotus, club, and disc. Lord Madhava holds the club, disc, conch, and lotus. Lord Govinda holds the disc, club, lotus, and conch. Lord Vishnu holds the club, lotus, conch, and disc. Lord Madhusudan holds the disc, conch, lotus, and club. Lord Trivikram holds the lotus, club, disc, and conch. Lord Vaman holds the conch, disc, club, and lotus. Lord Sridhar holds the lotus, disc, club, and conch. Lord Rishikesh holds the club, disc, lotus, and conch. Lord Padmanabha holds the conch, lotus, disc, and club. Lord Damodar holds the lotus, disc, club, and conch. Lord Purushottam holds the disc, lotus, conch, and club. Lord Achyuta holds the club, lotus, disc, and conch. Lord Nrsimha holds the disc, lotus, club, and conch. Lord Janardhan holds the lotus, disc, conch, and club. Sri Hari holds the conch, disc, lotus, and club. Lord Sri Krishna holds the conch, club, lotus, and disc. Lord Adhoksija holds the lotus, club, conch, and disc. Lord Upendra holds the conch, club, disc, and lotus. According to the Hayashirsha Pancharatra, there are 16 personalities. I shall now describe that opinion of how they hold their weapons. Keshav is described differently as holding the lotus, conch, club, and disc. And Madhava is described as holding disc, club, conch, and lotus in his hands. According to the Hayashirsha Pancharatra, Narayan and others are also presented differently as holding the weapons in different hands. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, indicated as the son of Maharaj Nanda, has two names. One is Svayam Bhagavan, and the other is Lila Purushottam. Lord Krishna personally surrounds Dvarka Puri as its protector. In different parts of the Puri, in nine places, he expands in nine different forms. The nine personalities mentioned are Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha,
Narayan, Nrsinga, Hayagriva, Varaha, and Brahma. I have already described the pastime and Prakash forms. Now please hear about the different personal expansions. The first personal expansion is Sankarshan, and the others are incarnations like the fish incarnation. Sankarshan is an expansion of the Purusha or Vishnu. The incarnations such as Matsya, the fish incarnation, appear in different yugas for specific pastimes. There are six types of incarnations or avatars of Krishna. One is the incarnations of Vishnu or Purusha avatars, and another is the incarnations meant for the performance of pastimes or Leela avatars. There are incarnations that control the material qualities or Guna avatars, incarnations of the Manus or Manvantara avatars, incarnations in different millenniums or Yuga avatars, and incarnations of empowered living entities or Shaktivesha avatars. Childhood and boyhood are the typical ages of the deity. Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, performed his pastimes as a child and as a boy. There are innumerable incarnations of Krishna, and there is no possibility of counting them. We can simply indicate them by giving the example of the moon that appears to be located in the branches of a tree, but is actually situated very far away. As mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, O learned Brahmins, just as hundreds and thousands of small ponds issue from great reservoirs of water, innumerable incarnations flow from Sri Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the reservoir of all power. In the beginning, Krishna incarnates himself as Purusha avatars, or Vishnu incarnations. These are of three types. Vishnu has three forms called Purushas. The first, Mahavishnu, is the creator of the total material energy, or Mahat. The second is Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, who is situated within each universe. And the third is Kshiradakshayi Vishnu, who lives in the heart of every living being. He who knows these three becomes liberated from the clutches of Maya. Krishna has unlimited potencies, out of which three are chief: willpower, the power of knowledge, and the creative energy. The predominator of the willing potency is Lord Krishna, for by his supreme will, everything comes into existence. In willing, there is a need for knowledge, and that knowledge is expressed to Vasudev. There is no possibility of creation without thinking, feeling, willing, knowledge, and activity. The combination of the supreme will, knowledge, and action brings about the cosmic manifestation. Lord Sankarshan is Lord Balaram. Being the predominator of the creative energy, he creates both the material and spiritual worlds. That original Sankarshan, or Lord Balaram, is the cause of both the material and spiritual creation. He is the predominating deity of egotism, and by the will of Krishna and the power of the spiritual energy, he creates the spiritual world, which consists of the planet Goloka Vrindavan and the Vaikuntha planets. Although there is no question of creation as far as the spiritual world is concerned, the spiritual world is nonetheless manifest by the supreme will of Sankarshan. The spiritual world is the abode of the pastimes of the eternal spiritual energy. Gokul, the supreme abode and planet, appears like a lotus flower that has 1,000 petals. The whorl of that lotus is the abode of the Supreme Lord Krishna. This lotus-shaped supreme abode is created by the will of Lord Ananta. By the agency of the material energy, this same Lord Sankarshan creates all the universes. the dull material energy, known in modern language as nature, is not the cause of the material universe. Without the Supreme Personality of Godhead's energy, dull matter cannot create the cosmic manifestation. Its power does not arise from the material energy itself, but is endowed by Sankarshan. Dull matter alone cannot create anything. The material energy produces the creation by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Iron itself has no power to burn, but when iron is placed in fire, it is empowered to burn. Balaram and Krishna are the original, efficient, and material causes of the material world. As Mahavishnu and the material energy, they enter into the material elements and create the diversities by multi-energies. Thus they are the cause of all causes. The form of the Lord that descends into the material world to create is called avatar or incarnation. All the expansions of Lord Krishna are actually residents of the spiritual world. However, when they descend into the material world, they are called incarnations or avatars. To glance over that material energy and empower her, Lord Sankarshan first incarnates as Lord Mahavishnu. In the beginning of the creation, the Lord expanded himself in the form of the Purusha incarnation, accompanied by all the ingredients of material creation. First, he created the 16 principal energies suitable for creation. This was for the purpose of manifesting the material universes. Karanavdikshayi Vishnu, or Mahavishnu, is the first incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he is the master of eternal time, space, cause and effects, mind, elements, material ego, modes of nature, senses, the universal form of the Lord, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, and the sum total of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. That original personality of Godhead, named Sankarshan, first lies down in the river Viraja, which serves as a border between the material and spiritual worlds. As Karanavdikshayi Vishnu, he is the original cause of the material creation. The Viraja, or causal ocean, is the border between the spiritual and material worlds. The material energy is situated on one shore of that ocean, and it cannot enter into the other shore, which is the spiritual sky. In the spiritual world, there is neither the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, nor a mixture of both, nor is there adulterated goodness, nor the influence of time or Maya itself. Only the pure devotees of the Lord, who are worshipped both by demigods and by demons, reside in the spiritual world as the Lord's associates. Maya has two functions. One is called Maya, and the other is called Pradhan. Maya refers to the efficient cause, and Pradhan refers to the ingredients that create the cosmic manifestation. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead glances over the material energy, she becomes agitated. At that time, the Lord injects the original semina of the living entities. To impregnate with the seeds of living entities, the Lord himself does not directly touch the material energy, but by his specific functional expansion, he touches the material energy, and thus the living entities, who are his parts and parcels, are impregnated into material nature. From time immemorial, after agitating the material nature into three qualities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead places the semina of innumerable living entities within the womb of that material nature.
Thus, material nature gives birth to the total material energy known as the Hiranyamaya Mahatattva, the original symbolic representation of the cosmic manifestation. In due course of time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Mahavishnu, or Mahavaikunthanath, by the agency of a further expansion of his personal self, places the seed of the living entities within the womb of material nature. First, the total material energy is manifest, and from this arise the three types of egotism, which are the original sources from which all demigods or controlling deities, senses, and material elements expand. Combining all the different elements, the Supreme Lord created all the universes. Those universes are unlimited in number. There is no possibility of counting them. The first form of Lord Vishnu is called Mahavishnu. He is the original creator of the total material energy. The innumerable universes emanate from the pores of his body. These universes are understood to be floating in air as the Mahavishnu exhales. They are like atomic particles that float in sunshine and pass through the holes of a screen. All these universes are thus created by the exhalation of Mahavishnu, and when Mahavishnu inhales, they return to his body. The unlimited opulences of Mahavishnu are completely beyond material conception. The Brahmas and other lords of the mundane worlds appear from the pores of the Mahavishnu and remain alive for the duration of his one exhalation. I adore the primeval lord, Govinda, for Mahavishnu is a portion of his plenary portion. Mahavishnu is the supersoul of all the universes. Lying on the causal ocean, he is the master of all material worlds. I have thus explained the truth of the first personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu. I shall now explain the glories of the second personality of Godhead. After creating the total number of universes, which are unlimited, the Mahavishnu expanded himself into unlimited forms and entered into each of them. When Mahavishnu entered each of the limitless universes, he saw that there was darkness all around and that there was no place to stay. He therefore began to consider the situation. With the perspiration produced from his own body, the Lord filled half the universe with water. He then lay down on that water on the bed of Lord Shesha. A lotus flower then sprouted from the lotus navel of that Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. That lotus flower became Lord Brahma's birthplace. In the stem of that lotus flower, the 14 worlds were generated. Then he became Lord Brahma and created the entire universe. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his form of Vishnu, maintains the entire material world. Since he is always beyond the material qualities, the material nature cannot touch him. The Supreme Lord and his form of Rudra, or Lord Shiva, brings about the dissolution of this material creation. In other words, by his will only, there is creation, maintenance and dissolution of the whole cosmic manifestation. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are his three incarnations of the material qualities. Creation, maintenance, and destruction, respectively, are under the charge of these three personalities. Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, known within the universe as Hiranyagarbha, and the Antaryami, or Supersoul, is glorified in the Vedic hymns, beginning with the hymn that starts with the word Sahasra Shirsha. This second personality of Godhead, known as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, is the master of each and every universe, and the shelter of the external energy. Nonetheless, he remains beyond the touch of the external energy. The third expansion of Vishnu is the Kshiradakshayi Vishnu, who is the incarnation of the quality of goodness. He is to be counted within the two types of incarnations, Purusha avatars and Guna avatars. This Kshiradakshayi Vishnu is the universal form of the Lord and is the Supersoul within every living entity. He is known as Kshiradakshayi, or the Lord who lies on the ocean of milk. He is the maintainer and master of the universe. O Sanatan, I have definitely described the three Purusha avatars of Vishnu. Now please hear from me about the pastime incarnations. No one can count the innumerable pastime incarnations of Lord Krishna, but I shall describe the principal ones. Some of the pastime incarnations are the fish incarnation, the tortoise incarnation, Lord Ramchandra, Lord Narsingha, Lord Vaman, and Lord Varaha. There is no end to them. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam by the demigods, O Lord of the universe, best of the Yadu dynasty, we are offering our prayers unto you mainly to diminish the heavy burden of the universe. Indeed, you diminished this burden formerly by incarnating in the form of a fish, or a horse, Hayagriva, a tortoise, a lion, or Lord Narsingha, a boar, Lord Varaha, and a swan. You also incarnated as Lord Ramchandra, Parasuram, and Vaman, the dwarf. You have always protected us demigods and the universe in this way. Now please continue. I have given a few examples of pastime incarnations. Now I will describe the guna avatars, the incarnations of the material qualities. Please listen. There are three functions within this material world. Everything here is created. Everything is maintained for some time, and everything is finally dissolved. The Lord, therefore, incarnates himself as the controllers of the three qualities, sattva-guna, Rajaguna and Tamaguna, or goodness, passion, and ignorance. Thus the transactions of the material world take place. Because of his past pious activities mixed with devotional service, the first-class living entity is influenced by the mode of passion within his mind. Such a devotee is empowered by Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. In this way, an incarnation of Krishna, in the form of Brahma, engineers the total creation of the universe. As mentioned in the Brahma Samhita, the sun manifests his brilliance in a gem, although it is a stone. Similarly, the original personality of Godhead, Govinda, manifests his special power in a pious living entity. Thus, the living entity becomes Brahma and manages the affairs of the universe. Let me worship Govinda, the original personality of Godhead. If in a kalpa, a suitable living entity is not available to take charge of Brahma's post, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself personally expands and becomes Lord Brahma. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Balaram says, what is the value of a throne to Lord Krishna? The masters of the various planetary systems accept the dust of his lotus feet on their crowned heads. That dust makes the holy places sacred, and even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lakshmi, and I myself, who are all portions of his plenary portion, eternally carry that dust on our heads. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, expands a portion of his plenary portion and, accepting the association of the material mode of ignorance, assumes the form of Rudra to dissolve the cosmic manifestation. Rudra, Lord Shiva, has various forms, which are transformations brought about by association with Maya. Although Rudra is not on a level with the Jiva Tattvas, he still cannot be considered a personal expansion of Lord Krishna. Milk is transformed into yogurt when it associates with a yogurt culture. Thus, yogurt is nothing but milk, but still, it is not milk. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said, milk changes into yogurt when mixed with a yogurt culture, but actually, it is constitutionally nothing but milk. Similarly, Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, assumes the form of Lord Shiva or Sambhu for the special purpose of material transactions. I offer my obeisances at his lotus feet. Lord Shiva is an associate of the external energy. Therefore, he is absorbed in the material quality of darkness. Lord Vishnu is transcendental to Maya and the qualities of Maya. Therefore, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says, the truth about Lord Shiva is that he is always covered with three material coverings, Vaikarika, Taijas, and Tamas. Because of these three modes of material nature, he always associates with the external energy and egotism itself. Sri Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is situated beyond the range of material nature. Therefore, he is the Supreme Transcendental Person. He can see everything inside and outside. Therefore, he is the Supreme Overseer of all living entities. If someone takes shelter at his lotus feet and worships him, he also attains a transcendental position. For the maintenance of the universe, Lord Krishna descends as his personal plenary expansion in the form of Vishnu. He is the director of the mode of goodness. Therefore, he is transcendental to the material energy. Lord Vishnu is in the category of Svamsa because he has opulences almost equal to Krishna's. Krishna is the original person, and Lord Vishnu is his personal expansion. This is the verdict of all Vedic literature. As the Brahma Samhita says, when the flame of one candle is expanded to another candle and placed in a different position, it burns separately, and its illumination is as powerful as the original candle. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, expands himself in different forms as Vishnu, who is equally luminous, powerful, and opulent. Let me worship that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. The conclusion is that Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are simply devotee incarnations who carry out orders. However, Lord Vishnu, the maintainer, is the personal feature of Lord Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma said, I am engaged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to create. Following his orders, Lord Shiva dissolves everything. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his form of Kshiradakshayi Vishnu, maintains all the affairs of the material nature. Thus, the supreme controller of the three modes of material nature is Lord Vishnu. O Sanatan, just hear about the Manu incarnations or Manvantara avatars. They are unlimited and no one can count them. Just hear of their source. In one day of Brahma, there are 14 changes of the Manus, and all those 14 Manus are considered incarnations manifested by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are 14 Manvantara avatars in one day of Brahma, 420 in one month, and 5,040 in 1 year. During the 100 years of Brahma's life, there are 504,000 Manvantara avatars. The number of Manvantara avatars for only one universe has been given. One can only imagine how many Manvantara avatars exist in the innumerable universes. And all these universes and Brahmas exist only during one exhalation of Mahavishnu. There is no limit to the exhalations of Mahavishnu. Just see how impossible it is to speak or write of even only the Manvantara avatar. In the Svayambhuva Manvantara, the avatar was named Yajna. In the Svarochisa Manvantara, he was named Vibhu. In the Ottam Manvantara, he was named Satyasena. And in the Tamas Manvantara, he was named Hari. In the Raivata Manvantara, the avatar was named Vaikuntha. And in the Chakshusha Manvantara, he was named Ajita. In the Vaivasvata Manvantara, he was named Vaman. And in the Savarnya Manvantara, he was named Sarvabhoma. In the Daksha Savarnya Manvantara, he was named Rishab. In the Brahma Savarnya Manvantara, the avatar was named Vishvaksena. And in the Dharma Savarnya, he was named Dharma Setu. In the Rudra Savarnya, he was named Sudama. And in the Deva Savarnya, he was named Yogeshvar. In the Indra Savarnya Manvantara, the avatar was named Brihadvanu. These are the names of the 14 avatars in the 14 Manvantaras. O Sanatana, now hear from me about the Yuga avatars, the incarnations for the millenniums. First of all, there are four Yugas, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dvapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. In the four Yugas, Satya, Treta, Dvapara, and Kali, the Lord incarnates in four colors, white, red, black, and yellow, respectively. These are the colors of the incarnations in different millenniums. As Gargamuni said in the Srimad Bhagavatam about Krishna, this child formerly had three colors according to the prescribed color for different millenniums. Formerly, he was white, red, and yellow, and now he has assumed a blackish color. In the Satya Yuga, the Lord appeared in a body colored white with four arms and matted hair. He wore tree bark and wore a black antelope skin. He wore a sacred thread and a garland of Rudraksha beads. He carried a rod and a water pot, and he was a brahmachari. In the Treta Yuga, the Lord appeared in a body that had a reddish hue and four arms. There were three distinctive lines on his abdomen, and his hair was golden. His form manifested the Vedic knowledge, and he bore the symbols of a sacrificial spoon, ladle, and so on. As the white incarnation, the Lord taught religion and meditation. He offered benedictions to Kardama Muni, and in this way he showed his causeless mercy. In the Satya Yuga, the people were generally advanced in spiritual knowledge and could meditate upon Krishna very easily. The people's occupational duty in Treta Yuga was to perform great sacrifices. This was induced by the personality of Godhead in his reddish incarnation. In Dvapara Yuga, the people's occupational duty was to worship the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, Lord Krishna, appearing in a blackish body, personally induced people to worship him. In the Dvapara Yuga, the personality of Godhead appears in a blackish hue. He is dressed in yellow. He holds his own weapons, and he is decorated with the Kastuva jewel and marks of Srivatsa. That is how his symptoms are described.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, expanded as Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. By this mantra, the people worship Lord Krishna in the Dwapara Yug. In the Kali Yug, the occupational duty of the people is to chant congregationally the holy name of Krishna. Accompanied by his personal devotees, Lord Krishna, assuming a golden color, introduces the Hari Nam Sankirtan, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra in the age of Kali. By this process, he delivers love for Krishna to the general populace. Lord Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, personally introduces the occupational duty of the age of Kali. He personally chants and dances in ecstatic love, and thus the entire world chants congregationally. As the Srimad Bhagavatam says, in the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead, who constantly sings the name of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. In the other three yugas, Satya, Treta, and Dvapara, people perform different types of spiritual activities. Whatever results they achieve in that way, they can achieve in Kali Yug simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. My dear King, although Kali Yug is full of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. It is that simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. Whatever result was obtained in Satya Yug by meditating on Vishnu, in Treta Yug by performing sacrifices, and in Dvapara Yug by serving the Lord's lotus feet, can also be obtained in Kali Yug simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Whatever is achieved by meditation in Satya Yug, by the performance of Yajna in Treta Yug, or by the worship of Krishna's lotus feet in Dvapara Yug, is also obtained in the age of Kali simply by chanting and glorifying Lord Keshav. Those who are advanced and highly qualified and are interested in the essence of life know the good qualities of Kali Yug. Such people worship the age of Kali because in this age, simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can advance in spiritual knowledge and attain life's goal. As stated before, when I described the incarnations of the material modes or the guna avatars, one should consider that these incarnations also are unlimited and that no one can count them. Thus, I have given a description of the incarnations of the four different yugas. After hearing all this, Sanatan Goswami gave an indirect hint to the Lord. Sanatan Goswami had been a minister under Nawab Hussein Shah, and he was undoubtedly as intelligent as Brihaspati, the chief priest of the heavenly kingdom. Due to the Lord's unlimited mercy, Sanatan Goswami questioned him without hesitation. Sanatan Goswami said, "I am a very insignificant living entity. I am low and poorly behaved. How can I understand who is the incarnation for this age of Kali?" Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "As in other ages, an incarnation is accepted according to the directions of the Shastras. In this age of Kali, an incarnation of God should be accepted in that way." The Vedic literatures, composed by the omniscient Mahamuni Vyasadeva, are evidence of all spiritual existence. Only through these revealed scriptures can all conditioned souls attain knowledge. An actual incarnation of God never says, "I am God," or "I am an incarnation of God." the great sage Vyasadeva, knowing all, has already recorded the characteristics of the avatars in the Shastras. He says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, "The Lord does not have a material body, yet he descends among human beings in his transcendental body as an incarnation. Therefore, it is very difficult for us to understand who is an incarnation. Only by his extraordinary prowess and uncommon activities, which are impossible for embodied living entities, can one partially understand the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By two symptoms, personal characteristics and marginal characteristics, the great sages can understand an object. Bodily features, nature, and form are the personal characteristics. Knowledge of his activities provide the marginal characteristic." In the auspicious invocation in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva has described the Supreme Personality of Godhead by these symptoms as follows. "I offer my obeisances unto Lord Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, who is the Supreme, all-pervading Personality of Godhead. I meditate upon him, the transcendent reality, who is the primeval cause of all causes, from whom all manifested universes arise, in whom they dwell, and by whom they are destroyed. I meditate upon that eternally effulgent Lord, who is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and yet is beyond them. It is he only who first imparted Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahma, the first created being. Through him, this world, like a mirage, appears real even to the great sages and demigods. Because of him, the material universes created by the three modes of nature appear factual, although they are unreal. I meditate therefore upon him, the absolute truth, who is eternally existent in his transcendental abode, and who is forever free of illusion." In this invocation from Srimad Bhagavatam, the word Param indicates Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the word Satyam indicates his personal characteristics. In that same verse, it is stated that the Lord is the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of the cosmic manifestation, and that he enabled Lord Brahma to create the universe by infusing him with the knowledge of the Vedas. It is also stated that the Lord has full knowledge, directly and indirectly, that he knows past, present, and future, and that his personal energy is separate from Maya, the illusory energy. All these activities are his marginal characteristics. Great saintly persons understand the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the indications of the two characteristics, known as Svarup and Tatastha. All the incarnations of Krishna should be understood in this way. At the time of their appearance, the incarnations of the Lord are known in the world, because people can consult the Shastras to understand the incarnation's chief characteristics, known as Svarup and Tatastha. In this way, the incarnations become known to great saintly persons. Sanatan Goswami said, "The color of the personality in whom the characteristics of the Lord are found is yellowish. His activities include the distribution of love of Godhead and the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. The incarnation of Krishna for this age is indicated by these symptoms. Please confirm this definitely so that all my doubts will go away." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "O Sanatan, you must give up your intelligent tricks. Just try to understand the meaning of the Shaktyavesha avatar. There are unlimited Shaktyavesha avatars of Lord Krishna. Let me describe the chief among them. Empowered incarnations are of two types, primary and secondary. The primary one is directly empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is called an incarnation. The secondary one is indirectly empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is called the Bhuti. Some Shaktivesha avatars are the four Kumaras, Narad, Maharaj Prithu, and Parashuram. When a living being is empowered to act as Lord Brahma, he is also considered a Shaktivesha avatar. Lord Shesh, in the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, and in the material world, Lord Ananta, who carries innumerable planets on his hood, are two primary empowered incarnations. There is no need to count the others, for they are unlimited. The power of knowledge was invested in the four Kumaras, and the power of devotional service was invested in Narad. The power of creation was invested in Lord Brahma, and the power to carry innumerable planets was invested in Lord Ananta. The Supreme Personality of Godhead invested the power of personal service to Lord Shesha, and he invested the power to rule the earth in King Prithu. Lord Parashuram received the power to kill rogues and miscreants. Whenever the Lord is present in someone, by portions of his various potencies, the living entity representing the Lord is called Shaktivesha Avatar, that is, an incarnation invested with special power. As explained in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spread himself all over the universe in many personalities through specific powers known as vibhuti. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Know that all beautiful, glorious, and mighty creations spring but from a spark of my splendor." But what need is there, Arjun, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. Thus I have explained specifically empowered incarnations. Now please hear about the characteristics of Lord Krishna's childhood, boyhood, and youth. As the son of Maharaj Nanda, Lord Krishna is by nature the paragon of Kishore, or youth. He chooses to exhibit his pastimes at that age. Before his personal appearance, the Lord causes some of his devotees to appear as his mother, father, and intimate associates. He then appears later as if he were taking birth and growing from a baby to a child and gradually into a youth. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally enjoying himself, and he is the shelter of all kinds of devotional service. Although his ages are various, his age known as Kishore or pre-youth is best of all. When Lord Krishna appears, from moment to moment, he exhibits his different pastimes, beginning with the killing of Putana. All these pastimes are eternally being demonstrated one after another. The consecutive pastimes of Krishna are manifest in one of the innumerable universes moment after moment. There is no possibility of counting the universes, but in any case, some pastime of the Lord is being manifest at every moment in one universe or another. Thus the Lord's pastimes are like flowing Ganges water. In this way, all the pastimes are manifested by the son of Nanda Maharaj. Lord Krishna exhibits his pastimes of childhood, boyhood, and pre-youth. When he reaches pre-youth, he continues to exist eternally to perform his Ras dance and other pastimes. Descriptions of Krishna's eternal pastimes are in all revealed scriptures, but one cannot understand how they are continuing eternally. Let me give an example by which people may understand Lord Krishna's eternal pastimes. An example can be found in the zodiac. The sun moves across the zodiac day and night and crosses the oceans between the seven islands one after the other. According to Vedic astronomical calculations, the rotation of the sun consists of 60 dandas,
and it is divided into 3,600 palas. The sun rises in steps, consisting of 60 palas. 60 palas equal one danda, and 8 dandas comprise one prahara. Day and night are divided into 8 praharas, 4 belonging to the day and 4 belonging to the night. After 8 praharas, the sun rises again. Just like the sun, there is an orbit to Krishna's pastimes, which are manifest one after the other. During the lifetime of 14 Manus, this orbit expands through all the universes, and gradually it returns. Thus Krishna moves with his pastimes through all the universes, one after another. Krishna remains within a universe for 125 years, and he enjoys his pastimes both in Vrindavan and Dvarka. The cycle of his pastimes turns like a wheel of fire. Thus Krishna exhibits his pastimes one after the other in every universe. Krishna's pastimes, appearance, childhood, boyhood, and youth, are all manifest, beginning with the killing of Putana and extending to the end of Mausala Lila, the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. All of these pastimes are rotating in every universe. Since all Krishna's pastimes are taking place continuously at every moment, some pastime is existing in one universe or another. Consequently, these pastimes are called eternal by the Vedas and Puranas. The spiritual abode known as Goloka, which is a pasturing land for Surabhi cows, is as powerful and opulent as Krishna. By the will of Krishna, the original Goloka and Gokula dhams are manifest with him in all the universes. The eternal pastimes of Krishna are continuously taking place in the original Goloka Vrindavan planet. These same pastimes are gradually manifest within the material world in each and every Brahmanda. Krishna is complete in the spiritual sky or Vaikuntha. He is more complete in Mathura and Dvarka, and he is most complete in Vrindavan, Vraj, due to his manifesting all his opulences. This is stated in the dramatic literatures as perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. Thus Lord Krishna manifests himself in three ways: perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not manifest all his transcendental qualities, he is called complete. When all the qualities are manifest, but not fully, he is called more complete. When he manifests all his qualities in fullness, he is called most complete. This is the version of all learned scholars in the devotional science. The most complete qualities of Krishna are manifest within Vrindavan, and his complete and more complete qualities are manifest in Dvarka and Mathura. Lord Krishna is the most complete Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vrindavan. Elsewhere, all his expansions are either complete or more complete. Thus I have briefly described Krishna's manifestation of transcendental forms. This subject matter is so large that even Lord Ananta cannot describe it fully. In this way, Krishna's transcendental forms are expanded unlimitedly. No one can count them. Whatever I have explained is simply a little glimpse. It is like showing the moon through the branches of a tree. Whoever hears or recites these descriptions of the expansions of Krishna's body is certainly a very fortunate man. Although this is very difficult to understand, one can nonetheless acquire some knowledge about the different features of Krishna's body. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. And this ends chapter 20 of the Madhya Lila. The Lord instructs Sanatan Goswami.